In this episode of Cubs Out Loud, it's another Let's Talk About Kink. This time around, we bring back an old topic in light of recent discussions on social media. The guys are joined by kink favorites Miss Tammy and Chess, as well as Brady, Mr. North American Bear Cub 2017, and Ray, Mr. North American Bear 2016, to contemplate consent and respect. In this second part, the guys talk about how to stop things from going wrong with consent and what to do when things do go wrong. Listen in as we continue talking about this deep subject. Respect boundaries as COL 417 starts now.
Wait, I pressed the wrong button. Sorry, I need to refresh that. So I started streaming. Then instead of hitting transition to go from our title shot to our thing, I hit stop streaming. So I had to restart the stream. So all that previous stuff gone.
Well, aren't you?
We're gonna get rid of that. We're not worried about that. We're moving on. We're streaming again. Let's try this again. May 28th, 2017. I'm Jeff.
Who's your bear? That's right. I am your bear.
I'm Damon. I'm Chester.
This room is a pigsty. And you're a dirty pig boy.
That makes me Gary.
Don't hurt nobody with your bad self.
Welcome to Cubs Out Loud, the third podcast of Editorial Link, episode number 417. And we're wearing the exact same clothes we wore last week. But we washed them. Really, we did.
Except for Chess. Chess is wearing nothing. Well,
at least no shirt. So we've got the people we had last week here. So we'll start with the person we already said. Chess, hi, hello.
Hey, what's up?
And we also have Brady, who we don't have video for because Skype is stupid.
It's okay, I'm still here. And it's IML weekend now, yay!
Woo! We have Ray.
Hey, everybody.
And we have the beautiful and gorgeous Miss Tammy.
Hey!
And Hammy's probably around there somewhere.
Well, I let him outside.
Oh, okay. So if for some strange reason we hear an oink.
He can open the back door by himself, though, yeah. So he could come streaming in any minute.
So that's it. So so if you want to know what's up with us, listen to last week's show. But I do want to say, before we get back into the topic that we're continuing on this week, I would like your help. We've been doing this streaming on YouTube. We got people in the chat room, or at least we had them. I'm not sure if when we switched over if they came back or not. That's okay.
They did.
Hopefully they'll be back and we're good. Yay, they're back. We got a live chat, so you can come over to us on YouTube. But for the stream, I've got a 7-year-old computer. It's really old. We need to get it upgraded in order to continue with this, and so hopefully make it better. So you would like to help out, go to gofundme.com/COLstream, and you can join and support us. It looks expensive, but that's just because we want a good computer to make sure everything goes smoothly and lasts for a while. So I appreciate
the cost of a cup of coffee. You can support your podcast.
Look, we haven't figured out how to do what we would do for our Patreon, but maybe that's something in the future. Also, you can't see Brady, but Brady, Gary, Damon, and I all are wearing COL swag. I got a Texas Orange shirt. Damon has a Cardinal shirt. Gary's wearing his hoodie. And Brady has
touch
a Raider
skin,
shirt.
Skin, honey. Touch all of the skin.
No, we just showed up. You can get something like this. You can also get hats, buttons, temporary tattoos, messenger bags, all sorts of shit over on Zazzle.com/cups.
Wait. Can I get poker chips?
Yes. We even have chips.
Good. Poker chips.
In fact, if there is something that you find that you would like, we even have underwear. They're boxers, but still.
Oh, I need that.
Yeah. So Zazzle.com/CubsOutloud. And if you find like a type of product, like there's wireless keyboards apparently that we could toss our logo on. I don't know how it would look on a wireless keyboard, but there's a whole bunch of stuff.
Complicated.
If you have any suggestions of what you would like, let us know and we can add that to the store. And with that, we're actually going to jump right into it, Gary.
Okay, so hopefully y'all for the audio listen to 416, which is our Let's Talk About Kink, Consent and Respect 2 or part 2, but now it's, we're like into two, part 2 of 2.
I suppose it was Consent and Respect 2 part 1. And this is Consent and Respect 2 part 2.
Right.
2.5.
There was a lot of stuff to discuss in the first one, so we're jumping back in where we left off at, for those of you. So now we previously discussed two topic areas about describing consent and respect, along with self-awareness, and when and how things can go wrong. And what we wanted to move into was how to stop things from going wrong. And, you know, it's great that we talk about these items, but more importantly, what is it that we can do when things go wrong and how to stop them is the first piece of it. And just interestingly, your thoughts that kind of created the outline was about two different things in regards to an individual level about stopping things versus an event level.
Right.
If you're actually participating, you know, at a function of some sort. So why don't we talk about the individual level first? You want to go ahead and take this?
Sure. Basically from folks who were listening to the last episode, the first part is really about being prepared. It's really about in moments where you're not in the heat of the moment, where you're not horned up and ready to get busy, where you're not experiencing pressure, or you're not, you know, trying to talk to somebody about what you would like to do. Thinking about consent in advance in calm, cool, rational moment and how you want to approach issues surrounding consent before you ever get there is crucial. Just like we spend time talking about, you know, thinking about safer sex practices, I said last time, and like thinking about them when you're not in the heat of the moment is important so that when you get there, you know what to do without having to kind of disrupt what's going on. What that means is, you know, talking about things like knowing what your own limitations are, thinking about how to broach the subject of consent with any potential partners, reminding, you know, being cognizant of the things that you need to do in terms of receiving feedback or permission or whatever else from folks. The other thing that you need to think about really is, especially with when it's not going to be just an individual level, but you're going to be out kind of in a more public space, is what it means to be respectful in that space, what it means to be appropriate in that space. Because what's respectful at, say, a leather event is probably going to be different than what's considered respectful in a crowded restaurant versus what's respectful in, you know, my grandmother's Sunday school classroom. The setting is going to determine appropriateness, is going to determine, you know, kind of what the expectations for boundaries might be. And that is going to inform the way you approach consent issues. Like we mentioned last time, at bear runs, because bears tend to be frequently huggy, they're okay with like affectionate touch and those sorts of things casually that, you know, might not be appropriate in other settings. That's going to inform the way people approach consent issues. That doesn't mean that there's not still questions of like, when I meet somebody, hi, how are you doing? And they go to give me the handshake hand. And I'm like, I'm kind of a hugger. Is that okay? Like I say that out loud. And then most people are like, yeah. And then some people are like, actually, I'm kind of a hugger or a handshaker, you know? And then we do that and that's fine. But thinking about the appropriateness of the event or space that you're going to be in and what constitutes respect in that setting is crucial from the individual level.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody wants to like comment or add stuff to that. That's certainly kosher.
I think personally, one of the ways to stop things from going wrong is to not presume that your personal comfort level is everybody's comfort level.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that that's the thing that I have found the most challenging in my lifetime is to know that I personally am not as open or as comfortable around absolute strangers, and that strangers are the ones that usually like it's this weird kind of like feedback loop. Like they seem to not know that I'm not okay with that, you know, and it's directly because they're a stranger. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. In terms of, I think that's why we should take a moment and like, I'm always cognizant. I always try to think about like, I don't make try not to make the presumption that everyone's okay with the same things that I am or not okay with the same things I am.
Yeah. For me, it's always been a matter of, trying to interact with who I, like when I'm interacting with my friends, there's a sort of different level. Like I know in some way, shape or form, some levels of how they want me to interact with them most of the time. And there are, you know, everyone has their own boundaries and they have their things that their limitations and what they won't do. When I'm in, stranger situations, like I don't know these people. I'll go ahead and use Claw as an example. I was in the pup mosh. And it was my second time doing it forever, you know, ever. Now, we all know pup moshes are, you know, usually it's a bunch of puppies coming around and playing around and doing different things. There is a, because you normally they don't speak, but there's a level of, like, if I come up against you and I rub against you and you rub back, that's the start of the boundary. That's the start of the thing. But if I were to come up to you and you kind of shy away like a puppy would, I know I shouldn't approach you. Like you're just there to kind of chill or whatever. So I'll step, I'll be the puppy that walks away. You know, it's, as you said, it's all about the situation and it's all about everyone. Like everyone has a different limitation. I talked about the hug guy from before where he didn't want me to hug him. And I could tell through our interaction that he didn't want me to hug him. I was fine with that. It would have been awkward if I still hugged him. That would be me going for what I wanted and not what he wanted. If I said, oh, I'm going to hug you, and he goes, oh, I don't want to, and you go, oh, well, fuck you, I don't care, and just like reached in and grabbed him, who knows how they're going to react? Who knows what's going to happen? They could be a germaphobe, you know, they could be a, you know, anxiety. That could be one of the things that causes tricks or anxiety. You know, you never know, and you should always try to. I like the word respect. I respect everyone's personal levels of intimacy, friendship, what have you.
You're bringing up a good point about people that, you know, can continue to hug even though you don't want them to. I don't mind when people give me a hug. What I don't like is when they feel the need to squeeze the shit out of me or pick me up. I don't understand why people feel that they have to do this. Shortly before Drenched Fur, I had surgery on my stomach. And when I got to Drenched Fur, I would go up to people and they would want to give me a hug. And I intentionally leaned forward to keep my stomach away from them. And as soon as I felt that person try to bring me in closer, I kind of pushed back from them and said, don't, because I just had surgery.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. Like, I'm not the type of person that I'm a hugger unless I'm intimate with that person already or I know them very well. I am a handshake type of person. If they say I'm a hugger and I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine, I'll hug you. But I expect just, you know, arms around you as a normal hug. But when they start taking it to the next level, it's like, and I always make noises to let them know that I'm not comfortable with what you're doing, but they continue to do it anyway.
Yeah, I've encountered a few hugs that, and I'll outright say it, that have been painful. Like someone will grab you in a certain way, and unfortunately, for me, their fists are right on my spine, and then they pull in or reach in, and that can hurt. That could cause potential issues depending on, where that person's back is in regards to their, any pre-existing conditions or something they may have. So there's like you said, Gary, like I shouldn't expect the way I hug to be the same way that someone else should hug. Like I would never want someone to give me that hard ass hug that takes my breath away. Unless I know it's coming. There are certain people I know that when they've given me hugs in the past, it's always been that, like Chester said, it's that kind of grab and kind of pull up. I'm okay with that because physically I'm fine. Like I know how they're going to do it and I could kind of prepare my body for it. But I've had the hugs sometimes where I wasn't ready for it. I didn't brace myself and it hurt. And I told them it hurt. And it's like, maybe you shouldn't do that for every person. You should always be careful about what you're doing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm a hugger personally, but when I'm meeting someone new for the first time, I shake their hand. And then, if we're hanging out for a while, when they go to leave, I'm like, can I give you a hug? I always ask, can I have your consent to give you a hug? And I never squeeze anybody unless they start squeezing back. Then I feel like at that point, hey, it's okay to, maybe squeeze a little bit harder. I usually don't like being picked up as well. If they ask, I'm okay with it. But usually it just hurts me. Like my joints don't pop and it gets really stiff and I don't like how that feels. I'm like, oh God, put me down.
Yeah.
Personally, I love it. I'm in the opposite side of the spectrum.
Yeah. And sometimes you can, if that's your space, then that's what you can give your consent to that.
Right.
I like it.
I'll remember that.
Especially if Chess gives me a big hug and picks me up because my back always pops.
Yeah, Stanley's a good hugger.
And there ain't too many people that can pick me up and squeeze me that hard, so I got to take what I can get, too.
I think that's probably the biggest challenge that individuals have is if no one's giving the feedback, they don't know that they're crossing lines, that they're inflicting unwanted whatever on another person. If someone doesn't say, please don't pick me up or don't hug me so tight or, don't hug me. I mean, all of these various things, like if no one ever says anything, you'll never know. And that's one of the things I kind of keep driving home. I know of me recently, at least it comes up a lot. I keep telling people, I'm like, if you don't give that feedback, then the person's never going to know. Well, and therefore it's unfair to have an expectation that they're going to change.
I think that that's a very important thing in terms of like best practices. that if somebody starts doing something to you that you don't like, whatever it is, that it is, on a practical level, it is a very good thing to give them that feedback. Tell them, hey, you know, whether it's making noise because they're hugging too hard, or whether it's saying, ah, I'm not much of a hugger, or, hey, take your hand out of my pants. Whatever the feedback is, like tell them. But ultimately, and I'll tell you that, from a legal standpoint, the onus is on the person who's the actor. There's something in discussions about what consent is and what's required in terms of like rape situations or sexual assault situations. Having the onus be on the person whose consent is being violated is kind of called a resistance requirement, that you have to say no, or that you have to struggle, or that you have to demonstrate to the other person that you don't like what's going on. And although that, you know, it's best practice is to let people know, the onus is ultimately on a on the person who is, you know, kind of the active party or is an actor. Because otherwise, I mean, maybe you've hugged somebody too hard and you triggered, you know, some kind of PTSD or trauma, and they are physically unable to tell you, please let go of me. And because they're having a fucking panic attack and they can barely breathe right now. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you've picked them up and you've squeezed all the air out of you and you can't tell them no. Or one that is near and dear to my heart, being tickled until you've laughed so hard that you can't breathe and say stop. Mm-hmm. So having there be this sense that it is on the recipient of some unwanted behavior, that it's on them to communicate, hey, don't do that. While making that communication is a good thing, and it promotes understanding and communication amongst all parties, ultimately, if you're the one who's initiating some sort of contact with somebody, it does come down to you as the first mover to secure consent and make sure that it's there. So I think that what you're saying, Gary, is perfectly valid and important, and people should do those things. But you have to understand, if you're the one who is exercising some kind of control over the situation because you're the actor, responsibility is on you, ultimately, for whatever action you're taking. So,
you know, I think, too, one of the things that's important to that we've pointed out, too, is that there's a difference in types of communities and cultures of people that gather. Like, there's a difference in some of the bear culture and a difference in the leather culture. And one of the things that, you know, consent is kind of one of the foundations for BDSM type encounters. It's not one of the root foundations, per se, of bear communities, although there's an implied consent with anybody that's going to have, you know, contact. But it's such a prominent part of BDSM that I think even just beginning to have dialogue with things like this creates language that people are able to use when they want to discuss their feelings or present, have discussion about what is consensual, what's not consensual, how to handle it. Maybe they don't even recognize that why it's not okay to hug everybody. They had no self-awareness that they could possibly be violating somebody's consent or making them feel uncomfortable. So just learning more from hearing conversation and being a part of a community and making those types of statements and norms within your own kind of community and subculture gives it language and allows it to be more easily defined by people. And just, you know, one of the things that Maya Angelou says is when you know better, you do better. And I love that. And sometimes it's just that they don't know that they're doing something that they're really violating somebody's personal space. They think they're given a hug and they associate that with love and something positive, and they don't really realize that they could be violating somebody's, you know, personal space or whatever it is that they want to call it. And I'll just have a sip of my daddy lady juice now.
So, Chess, taking it from the individual level to event levels or social levels, what are your thoughts on how we can continue, you know, keeping in mind how to stop things from going wrong to avoid circumstances?
I think that, you know, before, like, making a leap to, like, you know, event organizer type level, just on a social level, when we're at events or when we're in situations where we've gathered together and people are interacting in ways that might lead to questions of consent, keeping an eye out for one another is valuable, very valuable. If you see somebody being approached by someone and all of their body language is reading they're withdrawing and going, oh, I kind of don't want this, whatever it is, but the person is persisting, but they're not standing up for themselves, or they're not making themselves perfectly clear, or even if they are and the other person is continuing, like, being willing to step in and, like, kind of break the spell of, like, this kind of, like, chase and pursuit kind of thing is important. Just being like, hey, he said no. Or just like, hey, I don't think that she's interested. That just, the thing is because usually when folks are taking things too far, it's because they have this tunnel vision and are focused on this pursuit. And sometimes just being willing to say, like, hey, you're being observed, you're being watched, and what you're doing is not okay, is just enough to just break the spell, and then they snap out of it and they're like, oh, whoa, shit, sorry, oh, God. And then, like, then they go away. And, you know, they might have a reflective moment where they think about it later or not. But the important thing is to just, when you're in those social settings, that kind of self-policing and awareness of what's going on around can be critical to stopping shit from going wrong. One other big way of kind of paying attention on the social level is it kind of flashes back to our intoxication question, because sometimes there are folks who, you know, they've had a drink or five and they, you know, all their inhibitions are gone and they might do shit that they normally wouldn't do. They might cross lines that they normally wouldn't cross, or they become insensical to other people being able to give them consent or not. And so if you see your friend who's a sloppy mess, who's hanging all over somebody who doesn't want it, that's the point where you, as the responsible individual within the community, you're like, oh, you're a mess. Come on, let's go. No, it's back to the room with you. It's all good. She's, you know, she's not interested. You know, he's real sorry. He's just drunk. I'm going to take him upstairs now. Let's go. So that kind of community policing can be very important as well.
I had to do that for somebody at a gay pride event once.
Sure.
There was I was standing in a tent at one of the bars, and I looked over and this guy was just obviously too drunk to function. And at some point I noticed that he was making out with this guy and me, despite not trying to be judgmental, was very judgmental because I'm like, that doesn't look like it's a match. Just looking at the people. The one guy had walked away and I came over to the guy who was drunk and I asked him for his phone. And I said, well, at first I asked him if he was there with people and he said, yeah, his friends were somewhere in the bar. And I said, okay, good. Give me your phone. What is their name? And I went through his contacts, found one of them, texted him, said, hey, my name is Chester. I'm here with your friend. He's very drunk. Come get him. And a few minutes later, this group of guys came over and thanked me for watching out for him.
Yeah. I think that's very important. Like, I know it, and I know there's this whole idea about, like, oh, let your friends do stuff or do whatever, and, you know, it's okay because it's, but no, it's really not. Like, if you're, even if it's not really a friend, even if it's a total stranger, like, if you know something's going to go down or something could potentially go down, it seems kind of odd to me. And I understand you don't want to, maybe everything's fine and you don't know what's going on. Maybe there's some, you know, role going, you know, scene going on that you don't know about. But if you don't know about it, you have a, I mean, you have a right to go like, hey, are you okay? Or what's going on? Or do you need help? Or,
I usually just ask, hey, is everything all right here?
Yeah.
And just that much. And usually if everything's all right, if both parties are being like, especially the one that's given all the ooh, stay away from me feedback, if they're like, oh yeah, everything's fine. Well, yeah. then you've done what you need to do. But, you're right.
And I understand that there are some people that may not feel comfortable going that route or going that far. Well, if you're not comfortable doing it, maybe let a bartender know if you're at a bar, for example, or maybe let a security guard or, you know, someone at the event know, hey, I don't really know what's going on, but I don't like what I'm seeing over here. Could you check on it for me? You know, yes. It's just, and I know it sucks to be that kind of tattletale, whatever, but in reality, you could potentially be helping someone who may not be able to help themselves.
Sure. And I want to bring up one other thing that kind of incorporates both the social level awareness and looking, and also the individual one that I didn't really before, and that is being aware of the specific threat of in these settings where people are consuming alcohol specifically, being mindful of your drink, being mindful of other people's drink, because, you know, somebody can slip something into your drink and shit can go sideways in a hurry. And this could happen at a bar, could happen at an event. You know, be willing to go to your friend who's sitting over at the table and be like, hey, would you watch my drink for a second? And be clear that they're going to be able to actually watch it and that they will watch it.
Yeah.
And if somebody asks you to watch their drink for a second, don't just go, oh, yeah, 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 and then turn back the other direction to continue your conversation and not watch it. Because they're trusting you to protect them from somebody who might slip something into a drink. And that shit can happen and has happened. I know in the last year I know at least three people personally who have had issues surrounding that particular question.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Yeah.
Short story is Brady had about two drinks and I was very socially, well, I was lubricated. Let's just put it that way. I got up, walked over for some reason. I was asked to do something, got stopped by some, people that were talking with a few friends. I started talking to them and I just remember number one, the group looked shady. Had I been sober, my stranger danger senses would have been instantly going off. However, I was lubricated and that didn't matter at this moment in time. I remember one of them had a hood on and they passed me a drink. I don't know what was in it, but maybe me. Oh, free drink. Yeah, I'll take it. I took it. Went about my business, got another drink, and I drank that one first, had the other one. Next thing I know, I don't remember anything. They found me on my truck. I was sitting in the driver's seat. The keys were in the ignition. I was crying because I didn't know where I was. It was a very, very scary moment, and I was so thankful that I had my chosen family there that noticed that I had gone missing. They went looking for me. They found me in my truck. Alice drove me home. I remember at one point I said, do not drive through this yellow light. She drove through the yellow light and we got pulled over and then I puked everywhere. That was fun. I helped pay for that ticket though. That's the least I could do because she got me home safely. But it was not a good experience and I just felt I was ashamed I was very sick, but when I found out that it wasn't just me, that there were other people that I were friends with who also had been given a drink by this group of people, it was very scary because I didn't know what could have happened. Because what if I had taken off driving? What if they had gotten hold of me and did whatever they were planning to do by giving out these drinks? Like, it was a very, very scary and real situation, to the point now that when I'm at bars, I no longer drink at a bar. If it's like Jello shots or a drink that's given to me by someone that I trust, I'll have a drink, but that is it. If I'm at an event that I'm staying at a hotel, I will drink at that event because I'm going to be making my own drinks.
Yeah.
Just feel this isn't safe for now because I have a trust issue now with it.
And so, like, it's not just paying attention to the cup. It's not just paying attention to making sure you give your drink to a friend to watch if you're going to do that. But it's also keeping an eye out for your friend who suddenly was fine, you know, a beer ago and then had a cocktail and then went from, like, zero to schwasty-faced in, like, you know, 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate situation, and I'm glad that you're okay, Brady. And I know it. The thing that always has I always have that fear. That is one of my weird, like, maybe because of, like, you know, high school after school specials and all that stuff. Maybe it's one of those things that I always keep an eye on my drink, like I always do. And I'm definitely one of those people. If you want me to hold your drink, please, I will be glad to hold your drink, and it will be in my hand, and I will probably be watching it the entire time. Because I have that genuine fear of something like that happening, and I don't want it to happen. So I will be intently looking for that kind of situation. I rarely accept drinks from other people. If I want a drink, I will buy my own drink. I appreciate the sentiment of someone buying me a drink, but if we're going to buy a drink, I'm going with you to buy the drink. You know, I'm going to watch the person make the drink.
So you don't trust anybody with the drink.
No, I do not. Not that it has happened, but it's been ingrained in my head for some reason, weird reason, that I have a fear of it. I don't want it to happen because I know what those things can do, and I don't want it to happen to me. And I know it's happened, and it's unfortunate, but it's something that I intently don't want to happen. So I make as much of a make clear that I don't want it to happen. I make it a point where it can't, unless it's some random weird situation. Right. And but I agree that, like, keep track of your friends, even if you don't go necessarily have gone to the bar or to the event or to the, you know, whatever with them. I know it sounds shady, but, you know, you're at an event, you're at a run, you're at whatever, and everyone's allowed to have fun. But, you know, sometimes things could go really bad really quickly. And you can't necessarily prepare for. So I like to know, maybe a stalkery of me, but I like to know when I have friends at a bar or at an event. Like, I like to know when someone that I know is there. You know, I'll come up and say hi to you. We'll be, you know, friends, and maybe I don't necessarily hang out with you the entire night, but I know you're there. Mm-hmm. And you know I'm there. So that if something were to go wrong, hey, Damon, I don't feel really good. Can you get me help?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really important.
And I think personally, I mean, from the bear point of view, even like at events, even like not just like a bar event, but like at an actual run, I think we should also kind of have that communication with at least one or two points of contact. Most bear runs that I've gone to are the lazy bear ones where there's no contest or anything. It's just a bunch of bears walking around a hotel or a pool with a tumbler glass full of whatever alcohol they're drinking. And you're in the pool and someone's like, "Hi, here, take a sip of this." And so many people are like, "Okay, cool." And I think having that kind of communication of knowing no, because, I mean, I've been guilty of it personally, of someone I just met, like, "Oh, this drink's really strong. You should try it." And I'll try it. And I can definitely fess up to that. And with everything that's been going around now, I don't. But also to, in case something goes wrong, to keep a friend or a point of contact in the loop of what's going on, saying, hey, I've met this person. I'm going to go hang out with them in their room. This is their room number. And there was one event, actually, I texted a friend. Actually, it was Drench Fur. I told Brady. I was like, hey, Brady, I'm going to go hook up with this person. If I'm not back in 2 hours, call the cops. This is where I'm going to be at. And so, because it's one of those things where I try to do that just because it could just be me and my weird head, but it's like, if the worst possible scenario could happen, I want to make sure someone knows about it.
Yeah. Use the buddy system.
Yeah.
So, since you brought up your example was at an event, one of the things we wanted to talk about was in terms of, the event level. When it comes to stopping things from going wrong, and Chess, you were kind of looking that there's kind of two areas, I think, that the event, whether it be a large event or even just a smaller, kind of more social, recreational type thing should be looking at, and those would be monitoring as well as policy and procedure.
Sure. I think that, again, preparation is key, and that's true for events as well. And so having sitting down and thinking about these things in advance and what the appropriate role for the event is in advance, and establishing policies for certain types of things and procedures for how to handle, a report of some kind of violation, those sorts of things, is important. But a lot of events are run by committees or run by a board or run by, a club. In addition to just like the decision makers making those decisions, then further educating everybody who's going to be working in the event as to what those policies are is important. Like making sure that knowledge trickles down, like, hey, if you hear anything like this or if this situation comes up, this is your response. This is what you're supposed to do. And because what happens is if you either don't have those policies in place or you don't have that information trickled out to your other staffers or your security people or whatever it is, then you might as well, they're having to invent shit on the spot. Sometimes someone says, hey, this person just did this to me. And, it was, I've gotten away from it, but it was terrible and it might happen to somebody else. You're trusting that person's, spur of the moment decision making to be the right response. Mm-hmm. And they may make the right call. They may say, hey, I need to pass this up the chain. It's above my fucking pay grade. But they also might decide to be like, hi, I'm Billy Badass and I'm a vigilante right now. And I'm going to go under the auspices of this event and go confront this person who's been accused. And then shit could go sideways in a hurry. And then there's people fighting. There's bad shit happening. And it's under color of authority of the event. And shit gets real bad for the event real fast.
Yeah.
So having those policies and procedures in place is very important, and also disseminating that information to the folks who are working with the group is equally crucial. The other thing is, just like there's that kind of preventative thinking ahead stuff, there's also kind of the other side of it, that is the active monitoring. In the same way that we were talking about, keeping tabs on your friends and keeping an eye out for when you see people where, you want to walk up and be like, hey, is everything okay here? Staffers and other event staff or security or anything like that, I think that it's a good idea for folks who are working for the event to also take an active role in stepping in, kind of, if you see something, say something. Kind of mindset, and being kind of visible about your presence, because sometimes just the visible sight of your of your presence as, hey, here I am wearing my big, you know, staff name badge or my staff hat or whatever my shirt is, a special staff shirt. It can deter people who might otherwise be tempted to be bad actors.
Yeah.
In the same way where if you're going down the highway and you see up ahead of you flashing lights and it's a cop, you know, when you finally get up there, it's a cop with his lights on because of construction. You know, you see that stuff in advance and just the presence of it, suddenly you're on best fucking behavior and you're not.
Don't you feel so betrayed that you slowed down?
Yeah, and that car was fucking empty. There wasn't even a cop in that damn car. The thing is like, you know, just the presence, like your visible presence, that you're monitoring what's going on, can prevent bad shit from happening. And that's why I was like, if you want to know how to stop things from going wrong, these are some concrete steps that can be taken to stop shit from going wrong.
Yeah. At Macy's, at the stores, they have, several of them have what's called a visual security officer. These are not the security officers that apprehend and attack suspects or shoplifters or whatever. They're literally meant, they wear a red jacket and they're literally meant to be a visible presence to stop and deter theft. It is a weird thing, but it helps. Not always, but for the most part, it's meant to be like, hey, there's this guy standing there in this red jacket and they clearly have like a headset or whatever to kind of give the notice that if you steal something or you do something wrong, you're going to get, you know, you're going to get arrested or something's going to happen. So, I mean, it may not be this person that's standing here doing it, but they have a quick access to someone who can really come down and take care of you. I am a big believer in that visible presence, even if it's volunteers that are volunteers for security for an event, if it's organizers of the event. I like the idea of they wear a different color shirt. Like if the run has a shirt, they wear the big bright orange shirt because that's a very bright shirt that everyone can kind of recognize. Because it's one thing that I can go, okay, I know that there's someone here for the event. And if I have a question or if I have a concern or if I have an issue, I can go to that person. And either they should know what to do, or they should know who to talk to get me the information are to address the issue that is concerning me at that moment. Big thing that. Not every event does that, which is unfortunate, but at least if that were something there, that would be a good policy to have in place. Any kind of event needs some kind of, I think, visible deterrent. You know, even if it's a big guy in a security uniform wearing the dark glasses that you can't see their eyes, and you know that they're just standing there looming in the corner.
You make it sound so hot.
Well, yeah, but you know that at least I know that person's there, and they could potentially help me if something were to go wrong.
Right.
Yeah, in terms of the event planning piece, I think what folks need to know is most events, I'm going to speak on behalf of other events out of place, and I hope that like they'll agree with me in this concept. It is probably better to be overly cautious than it is to never say anything. So, for instance, at my event in the past, someone was doing something that was questionable, and people decided to address it and take action without coming and finding me as the person who's in charge of my event, or necessarily maybe, you know, a senior members of said organization. And I appreciate that people were taking that monitoring concept of what Chess is talking about earlier, you know, the self-policing, because it's easier to address it if it was a mistake and to say, no, it's okay, this is actually, you know, allowed, as opposed to finding out after the fact or after who knows how long something has been experienced to be like, no, actually that's not okay. So I think the best thing to do is just to say something because you see it, as opposed to not doing anything at all. And I think this kind of gets us into the next last topic area for the show, which was what to do if things go wrong when it comes to consent and respect. You know, one of the things is about, do you keep it to yourself because you're not the person, meaning you're third party, you're witnessing something and you're not sure whether or not this is consensual, because for you, it doesn't seem to be and or respectful, and you're not sure what to do at that point.
Sure. Well, basically what this, you know, this kind of section of the outline, when I did it, I was just thinking of what are the possible responses, not necessarily what is the advisable response, because the situations may be so varied. And people might get mad at me for saying this, but I have been essentially the victim of consent violations. And if you'd refer back up to what I was talking about before, where I kind of put up there, not every, you know, slap on the ass is sexual assault, where because of the scale and degree and kind of the violation, I just let it go. Mm-hmm. Because even though it was wrong, it was more trouble to me than it was worth to make a thing out of it. And I still think that that was the right choice for me. That doesn't mean that that's going to be the right choice for everybody, but that is an option. It may be that you're going to cause a bigger shitstorm than you care to deal with by saying something about it. But if you need to say something about it, you definitely should. Or you might talk to a third party and consult with them and say, hey, this happened to me. I'm not going to give you all the details necessarily or identify anybody. What do you think I should do? You know, with that's a non-confrontational way to deal with it, and may resolve things for you. It may not. Kind of the next kind of step you could possibly take, either by yourself or with the help of a friend or with some of the third party you talk to, is, you know, go talk to the transgressor, talk to the person who's crossed the line. I've also had instances where somebody has run roughshod over my consent and I've had to go talk to them about it later. Like, and I, including friends, including people that I've played with in a scene where, you know, shit, they crossed the line, but I had to go talk to them later and say, hey, we need to talk about something. We kind of broke a little bit of trust here and I want to fix it. And, you know, let's talk about it. If it's a stranger, you may want to have a friend with you and say, hey, you just did this to me and this was not okay. You do have to be careful in those sorts of situations about escalation, denial, and people getting ugly, counter accusations. That when it's a stranger and somebody you don't have a relationship with or some kind of other interaction or history with, that can be a dicey proposition.
Yeah, and it could also happen when you do talk to them, they may just be like, oh, I'm so sorry and everything.
Right.
Which is what you want. And I think a lot of people feel like they don't want to do that just because they don't want to have the conflict. Right. Or the possibility of the negative side, but it could totally be a positive situation. Just informing them, letting them know, and they'll apologize and everything. So,
and sometimes that's the right way to go, because as soon as you take it outside of those kind of options, you are involving more people. Because kind of the next kind of level of stuff that you can do is, at that point, you report something to event staff. And then once you let that genie out of the bottle, it's out there. And that means that if they're doing what they should be doing, they're going to follow their policies and procedures, whatever it is. And it's kind of out of your hands at that point. And that means that their response may be a fucking Hiroshima-style thermonuclear response, when all that was really warranted was, you know, a water gun and a rolled up newspaper going, hey, don't do that. Squirt, squirt, squirt. So you do have to think about that and think about, you know, how much how much you want it to be out there, what kind of effect, what you need to be okay after something happens, what you need in order for you to be okay, and make sure that that's the thing you're considering, and again, other collateral consequences for yourself and other folks in terms of publicity or shit being out of the bottle. Because, go ahead, David, you want to say something?
Well, I'm just saying, for example, if I were to take my flogger and hit someone on the back with it without any, no talking, no nothing, and I just hit them on the back with it, that is technically assault.
Yeah.
That is technically assault. Therefore, I could be arrested.
Yeah.
Someone could call the cops and arrest me, and I am at fault. And if that's the level that they wish to go for you said to feel the comfort like they were violated, I have to, as the aggressor, to pay that penalty potentially.
But by the same token, if it's me that you hit, and I don't like it, and I wasn't happy about it, but I'm like, oh, Damon's been drinking. And I'm like, I really know and like Damon, and I'm not hurt. I was upset, but what's going to make me be okay is to talk to Damon later and hash it out between us. Then that's the appropriate response. Yeah. Instead of going to the event staff, who may have a policy of, we're calling the cops.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of what I'm talking about, because that was kind of the next step is if you don't get what you need to be okay from the event staff after making your report and letting their policies and procedures kind of do their work. The next step, either because they do it or because you need to do it, is to take it to the authorities. Now, there's an issue that perennially comes up when we talk about these sorts of allegations at events being reported, and it goes to the police. Or prosecutors, is that they're just not interested, that they just don't want to touch it, either because it's a leather event or a kind of sexually themed event, and that's too icky, or they feel it's politically unpalatable, that their victim isn't going to be sympathetic, that they're afraid that, they're going to get themselves in front of a jury somewhere, and a jury's going to say, something along the lines of, well, you were at a fucking sex convention. Mm. What the fuck did you think was going to happen?
Mm.
And because they're political animals, they may not want to take... the prosecutors are political animals. They may not want to take that risk of putting that kind of a case out there, because it would be a very... I think it would get media attention. And that's not necessarily what they're about. They don't want to lose when the camera's on. And so, additionally, they may feel that way themselves. They might be squicked out and go, ooh, weird gay and queer people hitting each other or having drunken orgy time. Like, I don't want to get my foot in the middle of this. I don't want to do anything with that because I'm not going to be able to prosecute it. That unfortunate, it's an unfortunate reality that sometimes is the response of law enforcement. But the thing that you have to do is, when there's a claim that this sort of stuff has happened, you have to let law enforcement do its job. You have to let the criminal justice system do its job, because if you don't, and you have kind of this vigilante action where people are either being crucified on social media, or people are, blowing other horns and beating drums and getting the torches and pitchforks, there are folks who will make accusations for other reasons. They will make accusations to save face. they will make accusations because they're nasty fucking mean girls. There are people who will, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but like with the pageantry that is contests, you're telling me that there's not some nasty queen out there who's not going to watch, not going to want this person who's running to win. And so there's going to be some shenanigans. I'm like, oh my God, this person told me that they were raped by this person at an event and I can't disclose who it was, but without violating confidence, but that guy's an asshole. And that shit goes all over social media. You think that that's not going to affect the way that their contest run happens? Yeah. So because those things are there, once things are serious enough to make it to the level of like, hey, this shit needs to be reported to the police, you need to let the police do their fucking job. Yeah. You need to, because also I don't want to get justice from the hands of event organizers. Yeah. If that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I don't trust like justice to happen because folks who are good at throwing and basically what is it, a gigantic party, they're not trained to do that shit. They're not trained to like investigate. They're not trained to weigh evidence. They're not trained to fucking prosecute a crime. You leave that to the people who – that's their job. And it may not lead to somebody getting the satisfaction that they feel like they need in terms of retribution or getting a perpetrator or something along those lines. That's not the only way to be okay. There's other ways to address your issues than seeing the bad guy punished.
And you whether that's some really, really good points about, I had just jotted down some notes myself while you were talking.
Yeah.
About observing things, reporting things, differentiating between what is hearsay, what is firsthand knowledge, and being objective.
Yeah.
About what you see and how you report it. And you know, I think since everybody that's at least in discussing was at CLAW, we've seen a lot of the documentation and posts on social media like you were talking about. And I don't have anything bad to say about my experience personally at CLAW. But, you know, it was kind of like it was like a pitchfork thing. It was like a witch hunt. And I don't mean that in any way to diminish people that had experiences that were negative that need to be addressed. But, you know, it's okay to have opinions about consent, but it's not okay to attempt to comment about specific incidences when you don't have any firsthand knowledge of it. And it's not okay to discuss publicly things that didn't happen to you without the permission of the person that it happened to. Maybe they don't want that all over Facebook. And not only was their consent violated once, now you are repeatedly violating it because you are repeatedly putting it out there with their name and their, you know, every little Tom, Dick, and Harry is coming out of the corner to send them a message and ask them what happened. Just because they're nosy bitches sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I've had that in the past. Like, get a message on Facebook from somebody going, what happened to so-and-so? Well, bitch, if you know them that well, ask them yourself. Why are you coming to me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just pot stirrers, and you know we don't have a place for those people. That just creates more diversity division amongst people that you don't need that. So while it's important to, you know, be aware of your surroundings and in some ways police one another and be protective, and I don't want to say nurturing, but at least, you know, aware of your fellow person, brother, sister, whomever. Don't overreact because it serves some other purpose. Now, I certainly don't think anybody that we're having this discussion with would do that. But there are people out there that would, to either gain the attention for personal gain or just to watch it unfold. Yeah. You know? Or if they have a beef with the event.
Right. And so it's interesting because one of the things that came out of Claw for me personally was that I had gone to one of the sessions and it was about event planning. And it was a round table. It was a whole panel. There was like 14 of us, and each one of us individually, I think, was in charge of or has in the past put on an event. Notably, that grouping, I think I was the only person maybe that came from the bear community. Everyone else was from leather. But what we shared in commonality were hurdles about how to, you know, market, how to PR and stuff. One of the subtopic areas that brought up was about social media and how social media gives everybody voice. But the challenge as an event planner is you don't really have anything to combat those social voices when they come for you or are against you, whether there's any truth behind the statement or what it is that they're doing. And that's why it's very dangerous as third party to make decisions on behalf of others to say certain things or do certain things, unless, you know, as I think what was just described, to go back to it, was, you know, do you have the consent, you know, the agreement from the aggrieved individual to speak on their behalf?
Yeah.
And if you don't, then be clear that if you're going to make a statement that this is your opinion based on whatever that is. And if you can't make that concretely, then maybe you should probably shouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
It's it's great that you guys are bringing this particular topic up, particularly in the point of view coming from social media, because of what happened at Claw. There was somebody that went on to the Claw Facebook group and was, like Tammy just said, you know, coming at them with a pitchfork. Coming at Claw, even, you know, why do we not have more information about this? Why isn't Claw doing something about this? Why isn't the organizers getting involved? You don't know. The organizers might very well know exactly what's going on and might be in contact with the person who was
whatever happened,
who was violated, the person who was doing the violation. The police might be involved. We don't know those facts. So why continue to perpetuate it?
That thing where they would say, sorry, we can't comment on an ongoing investigation. Maybe that's why we haven't put out a fucking press release about it.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, you never know what's going on behind the scenes. And I think the issue is that, yes, people should have a right, quote unquote, to know. But they don't need to know everything. We don't need to know what's going on. I'm done. Like, I've let everything go in a sense, you know.
I don't need a play by play of what happened.
Exactly. I don't need to know this, that, and the other.
That's the key point, I think, here is that some people want 100% transparency. So they want to read the stenographer's breakdown second by second of every little bit of what happened. And then there are other people who are like, TLDR, I got a life. Like, I am not interested in knowing all the nuances other than you are taking care of it and that, you know, the parties that need to be addressing it are doing that thing. And I think that's the biggest thing about when, you know, something does go wrong. If you're the person that this is against, like you're the victim, let's say, put it that way, you need to make the decision for yourself on what it is that you want to do, recognizing, I think, as Chess was saying, at a certain point, a threshold is going to be crossed and it will no longer stay a private matter and it will become bigger and eventually could become public beyond that. And if you're third party to that and as a witness, you need to compose yourself. You need to figure out what it is that you want to say, who to, what you want to do about it, and go from there. And then if you're beyond that and you have technically no connection to this other than like, well, you know, my good friend, co-host of a podcast, heard from so-and-so who was a witness to this thing. Really, girl? Like, it's gotten out of hand now. Like, you know.
Well, you know, and then again, even those people that are shit stirrers, or asshats, my favorite word. if you put out a statement that says we're not going to comment on an ongoing investigation, then they're going to say, oh, Yeah, here you are. You're like stonewalling us. You don't want us to know anything. What do you got to hide? You're trying to hide something. No, you know, it's just not always that way. It's hard to put on an event and have to be responsible for all that stuff.
I blame reality TV.
Donald Trump.
People's expectations.
I blame him for everything.
Real-time updates on their favorite reality drama.
Yeah.
And that's fucking, the thing is, do you want to know the truth? Do you want to hear the response? Great. As soon as we get to the bottom of it, we'll let you know. But until then, we're not going to fucking run our mouth about shit that we're not sure of.
Yeah.
So, and I will tell you.
Calm your tits. Calm them.
We'll hire Tom Spicer to actually tell everybody what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. In relation to my event, many years ago, something happened. And it took months and months and months for a resolution, quote unquote, to be found. And even then, when the discussion was being had with the entity, the other entity that was involved, a lawyer had to be present to, like that's how serious sometimes things are. And people do not understand that. And they think, like, that you're just avoiding it and you're not talking about it. And it's like, no, actually, maybe you just can't say shit. Like, maybe you don't have enough information. Maybe you will never be released. And then, no offense, girl, it's all on you. Like, you're going to have to learn how to deal with that because these people are already in the thick of it doing whatever it is that they have to do.
There are non-disclosure agreements on a lot of things. There are sealed, you know, court cases that happen. There's things that can happen that you may not necessarily have any control over. And by legality, you are not allowed to discuss. It's just the way sometimes things happen. If sometimes there's a settlement that goes involved with it, and that settlement may include that you are not allowed to discuss it for X amount of years. You know, that's just the way sometimes it goes. And I get, you know, social media and how it can potentially exploit things, grow things out of proportion. Things could get very tense very easily. And the main reason I think sometimes that is, you know, a lot of times it's all like written down in text. You don't understand the nuance of the wording or what have you. Someone can very easily say, I don't like cheese fries. And someone can go, well, you don't like Hardee's because they always serve cheese fries. No, that's not what I meant. I just don't like these cheese fries. It's something that could, like, for whatever reason, can get very easily blown out of proportion.
Who don't like cheese fries?
I actually don't.
Tammy, it's okay. Everyone's allowed to have their personal taste.
Put some bacon on. People
that are lactose intolerant, they probably don't.
Exactly. We'd love to have some poutine.
So, I know that we've rattled on about this for two episodes worth now. Is there anything else that we've talked, you know, that we've either touched on or not really gotten a hold of that you guys feel like is important to talk about in terms of basically our topic, consent, you know, any other kind of odds and ends and wrap-up type
things? For me, one of the biggest things is I learned in one of my classes from the guys in Australia, the pups guys from Australia. It was like, don't be serious. A dickhead. Yeah. Serious pups. Like, don't be a dickhead. And I know that sounds really like, don't be an asshat. Like, that's sort of the thing. Like, if someone is, if you are in the issue or wanting to potentially, you know, violate consent or what have you, or if you've given consent to a certain degree and you're now at that point where you're past that, say something, do something. Don't let nothing happen, because that's how I think people get really hurt, is when they feel they can't. And you should never not feel you can't. If you don't want it to happen, you don't want it to happen. No means no. I know that sounds trite, but that's the reality. If I say I don't want you to touch me, don't touch me. And if I'm in an elevator or what have you, and you grab my sack, like, if I give you a glare or I hit your hand or I tell you no, you don't do it again. Are you?
Damon, I will never grab your sack.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that so much.
You know, I think you're speaking from the person giving consent. I think something that never gets discussed is, what if, God forbid, somehow you find yourself in the position of you are the person that has violated consent? Yeah. Whether it was deliberate, whatever the circumstances were in which it occurred, how do you move forward from that if you find out that you are the person that has violated consent? Where do you go from there?
Mm. True that.
You know, I think part of that is to do what you need to do to make amends and apologize for your behavior, be accountable for it, and
take ownership.
To move forward and take ownership of it,
yeah,
and acknowledge it, and, you know, try to not be defensive and use all those, you know, defense mechanisms that we do to try to preserve our self-identity. And there's a positive way to handle it. And sometimes you have to be a little introspective and think, you know, what is it about me that I allowed this to happen? And what I thought I was somebody that this would never happen to. And now I find myself in this situation. And how do I handle this? And how do I move forward? Sometimes that might mean involve talking to other people that you have respect for and finding out, getting feedback from them. But, you know, I think that's something that sometimes we're so shaming of people for being somebody that violates consent. And it's not always a horrible person running around with a pitchfork who's ready to, you know, prey upon everybody. It happens sometimes. And it may not have been initially malicious. It can happen sometimes. And so we have to be able to facilitate communication on both ends to make amends, be accountable, and to move forward in a positive direction.
And I think start with that apology.
I was just going to say that part of that, Ms. Tammy, I think is, even when we talk about owning it, it's not just owning your behavior with the specific person that there's been some kind of issue. I think it's also, while you might not have like complete and ultimate responsibility for any larger or wider fallout, a social media shitstorm. Like, some of that is on people who are shit disturbers and pot stirrers.
Right.
But the thing is there's still a but-for causality there.
Yeah.
And so even if you can't, you're not to blame for all of it, there's still a certain acknowledgement of, you know, if I hadn't crossed this line, if I had behaved myself in a different way, if I had made better choices, those things and the consequences that come from them would not have happened. And as far as you're able to see it, at least awareness of it and doing what you can to, I don't know, comport yourself better. Yeah.
Take your lumps and move forward.
Yeah.
In a positive direction.
Yeah, that's also part and parcel of the owning it. It can't just be like, oh, well, I said I was sorry to that person, now I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No.
It's a much bigger thing than that.
You can't be contrite.
Right.
You're going to have to take your licks.
Yep.
And I think one of the best things I heard recently in terms of, like, let's say that you are the transgressor and you've actually, you know, you've made a mistake and you need to reconcile and make amends. One of the most amazing things I read was that the best form of apology is to actually never commit that again and show that in your actions moving forward, which may be that you talk about it very openly, that you tell people, listen, I am an example of a person who made a mistake once in my life, and I am never going to make that mistake again. And I want people to know that and learn from that, as opposed to just leaving it private. I mean, that's an individual decision. I respect people either way, whether they want to talk openly about it or they don't want to, about things that they've done. But I know that for me, I've always learned greatly when people own the mistakes that they've made, whether it was intentional or unintentional.
I think you have to be articulate and self-aware and insightful enough to be able to do that. too. Not everybody can be as articulate as you, Gary.
I'm going to try to not read articulate as like a whole lot of things for verbose under one umbrella word, but anyways.
Yay, topic.
Yay. So are we ready to move on from the seriousness and talk about dirty shit?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'll start off with a neat trick. So Ghost Bear apparently is at Bear Ranch, and now you see it. Now you don't.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
hey. And he's not small.
Fun times.
Yeah.
I'm not going to participate in this behavior.
although the thing that gets me is like... I don't know. His body positioning seems a little strained, like with the raising of both arms and twisting from the hip. And
I think he was trying to get a good picture of it happening.
I guess. He just looks really uncomfortable.
I like how everyone's commenting on the action, and Chess is like, the composition of this photo is just terrible.
It's okay, because usually I talk about that kind of stuff anyway.
That's true. That's true.
I will make some comment.
I'm usually the one who's pointing
this out. Do you see what's going on in the background?
Photographer instincts kick in.
Okay. Yeah. Never mind. I think I know what's going on. Because based on the second picture, the swallower is on a
toilet. Oh, my God.
Not saying, like, I don't know what they're doing. I'm assuming that he's just sitting there, but it's very...
I mean, the toilet lid is up, but the other one is down, so you never know.
God.
Anyway.
It looks ergonomically friendly. Like, that's like OSHA laws, you know? You don't want to, like, strain anything. You got to be at, like, a good height.
Or maybe he's cleaning everything out, so...
Right along. Let's move on.
I cared about was the trick. And everybody's pointing about all this other shit. Anyways.
You should know better.
Since when has a magic trick ever not been under scrutiny?
Truth.
All right. That being said, David, what is your Tumblr pick?
So I called it Art V Sour Posing, and you've got a guy, really good picture, bearish guy, bald head, dark fur, in a shower, kind of. Yeah, it just looks really good. I like the composition, as it were.
Artsy shower posing?
Yeah.
You know who
I'm not looking at these pictures. I just want y'all to know that.
Gabriel would love this picture.
Because it's got water in it.
Oh.
Gabriel's a fan of the wet bear, and that qualifies big time.
I like his tattoo.
Hey, gentlemen. I'm going to sign off because my little grandbuddy is here.
Hi. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. We're going to look at stuff you shouldn't be seeing.
You can't see it.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Miss Tammy.
Bye. Bye, Miss Tammy.
Yay.
I'm glad she told us ahead of time that the family was coming over for Mother's Day, so we weren't shocked.
Yeah.
In her bedroom.
Well, so that one was mine.
Chester?
Mine is called, and I'm sorry, but I do not have a... Latin accent, but it's suero, which means leather in Spanish.
Oh.
It is of a very hairy bear smoking a cigar, grabbing onto the top of his harness.
Mm-hmm.
This is hitting Damon's buttons all over the place.
A lot of buttons. all at the same time.
So,
yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah?
Is he wearing, like, a leather collar?
That's what it looks like. Could be.
Okay. I'm just, the reason why it puzzles me is because it almost seems like it's too big or not, I don't understand why it's.
Or it could have been yanked off to the side.
Yeah, or he's got a very thick neck and because his head is down, it's pushing it out.
Yep. Nice.
Wow. Very nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mine was meant to bring humor to the seriousness of the subject today. It's titled Ginger Unicorn.
Nice. I feel like I've seen this before.
So, Infamous Mets on Tumblr. Well, I've seen other versions of this. I don't know if I've exactly seen this one before, but he decided to take a nice, like, magenta kind of deep red dildo and place it on his forehead, and then notably is kind of in a unicorn pose with it nicely balanced. But he's got a shaved head, just a little bit of crop of hair horns? And a nice, you know, bushy kind of auburn red beard.
It's kind of like claws. Nice.
Yeah. It's Lady Gaga's newest fashion trend.
Everybody's going to put dildos on their foreheads, take pictures, so.
Nice.
Chess, what about you?
I cheated. I have two.
That's not cheating.
But one of them, well, both of them are me, but they're me pimping other things. The first one is entitled Killer, and it's a link to a picture of me wearing the new Killer Bob t-shirt.
Yay!
That will be released at IML. Or I guess is being released. Timey-wimey is being released right now. and it is.
Timey-wimey, I talked about it last week.
Oh, very nice.
Which actually airs.
It's today.
Today. 2 weeks ago, depending on when you're watching.
So 2 weeks ago, we talked about the same shirt.
Today. So, but yeah, but basically, Bob asked me if I would help do some modeling photos for a concept that he already had. And with the help of Cameron Shelby, Scorpio Pup, took several photos that we then transferred to Bob, and he turned into this awesome shirt, which is great. And I was happy because it kind of looks like me. And after having my collection of like about 30 different Killer Bob shirts, now I am a Killer Bob shirt. Yay.
Yay. So
before you move on, Chess, I do want to own this because you haven't listened to the previous episode yet where I talk about the fact that I know when we were at Claw on the cigar deck, I kind of said something and I felt like I kind of said, I unintentionally said something that might have bothered you, which was in reference to that it was you in the design.
Yeah.
And I'm not debating the fact that it's you. What I finally realize is the reason why I don't see you in the design is because this looks exactly like somebody I know actually in Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
And every time I look at the shirt, I see him, not you. So
that doesn't bother me. It's not a perfect likeness of me, but it's a clear enough one for my purposes. I like it.
It's an ego boost.
Yeah. The second one that I've got there is I've entitled it Crying for Manga. But basically it is a photo that I took of myself busy fucking crying over the new Gengoro Tagame book called My Brother's Husband.
Which if you look at Damon right now, he's holding up.
Yay!
Yep.
It's excellent. They've got the English translation out there available. It's great. I've been a big fan of his for a long, long time. Looked at a lot of his art. It's all been pretty much not safe for work smut and some pretty really kind of graphic and inventive, BDSM pornography. And it's not for the faint of heart in a lot of cases. But it's part of what I've liked about it, aside from just the visuals, is there's always been a strong psychological bent to it, which I enjoy. But this one is it's an all audiences level book. Like there's, you know, a couple of like kind of Japanese sensibility about nudity in a couple places, but nothing's explicit. You're not seeing, you know, dicks and assholes kind of thing. And it's really about basically a guy who his twin brother was Japanese. They were both Japanese. His twin brother moved to Canada and married a big old bear, and then I believe was killed in a car accident. And then his Canadian husband is visiting Japan and like meeting the family, meeting this guy. Meeting his twin brother, and just kind of like the interactions and the emotional impact of it all is really, really powerful. And it addresses a lot of, you know, family reactions. And there's this little girl character in it, and she's asking all these questions that is causing the twin brother, who's straight, to, you know, ask himself the same questions, you know. About, you know, did I hold it against my brother that he was gay? Did I, you know, treat him differently? Should I have been more accepting of, you know, him being happy? That sort of thing. And it was enough that I cried three times during the damn book. I read it all in one sitting. Wow. It's fantastic. So anyway, I'll get off that. Somebody else go.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but because I bought it on Amazon and I won another book to get the free shipping. Yeah. I got The Passion of Gengoro Tome.
Another fucking great book.
Yeah. So
fucking great.
And that's the one I kind of wanted to start at to kind of get a different perspective.
Yep.
Also available on Amazon.
Yeah. .com.
Okay. Oh, right. God. Pray.
Okay. So it's called Fuck My Beauty. I got really down and wanted to make myself laugh because that's what I tend to do. It all started because I know people that call men that call their asshole a boy pussy, and then some will shorten it to bussy. But every time I hear bussy, I think of beauty. And so I just thought, how funny would it be to Photoshop Gary Busey's face on a bunch of assholes?
Oh,
so,
wow.
The first picture is entitled Rim My Beauty, which is a man rimming an asshole of Gary Busey's face. The second one is Fuck My Beauty, which is Gary Busey's teethy mouth taking a dick. And then the last one is Come Out My Busey, or Cream Pie Busey, which is a bunch of cum coming out of an asshole that is also Gary Busey's open teethy mouth.
That's so weird.
Oh my God!
Ray showed those to me for the first time last night, and it was so funny.
Oh, jeez.
Raymond, I have loved you like a brother for over a year, but this is the first time I'm going to say this to you, and I'm glad I'm going to be able to say it live. That is some fucked up shit right there. You is a twisted individual, just for the record.
Wow.
And I love you.
And we love you.
Oh, my God.
So let's get off that trauma. And Brady, what do you got?
I am actually reblogging sharing some photos that were done by Pupdozer for a photo shoot that we did. And it's specifically, they're called the 6 embodiments of fear. And these are the fears that I struggle with on a daily basis. But I wanted to share these because I am in love with his photography work and just the emotion that he was able to capture when we were doing this. It was just amazing, and I wanted everyone, because I don't think a lot of people have seen them still. I just wanted to share it and get his work out there.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it's a really good photo series, Brady, that I'm glad that you did it and put it out there, because I think some of them evoke some really strong things for people just seeing them.
I liked them.
They're very nice. Moving on into the links. Chester?
My link is called Tea Consent.
Oh, I think I've seen
I know it I have posted this on my Facebook before and probably my Tumblr. But a really quick rundown. It is a guy talking about consent, but comparing it to tea and how you take your tea and how you like your tea and so on and so forth. And it's a graphic illustration, so it's really easy to follow.
Cool.
If you haven't seen it before, it's fucking amazing. It's 2 years old. It's from May of 2015, and it's timeless. You have to watch this simple animation where this guy basically talks about drinking tea and how you wouldn't force tea on other people. And how do you, like, it's such an amazing way to talk about, you know, sharing things with people, specifically sex. But yeah, it's awesome.
And if you don't like tea, well, I'm not going to force tea on you.
Agreed.
True that. By the way, Sigma Wolf wowed my post, yummed Damon's post, yummed and oyed Chester's post, and then I forgot to post pit things. But he did mark that so wrong, it's right, which I think is probably in regards to race. Moving on. Gary?
I'm boosting the signal on Dr. George. He did a whole series of videos while he was at Class 17. This is one of them. It's only about 5.5 minutes long. Some of you on the podcast today as guests may know who this is. Zach did a speaking as part of a bigger piece. It's called Treatment, Access, and Changing Times. And he talks about his job regarding healthcare access. And it's so fucking profound for only 5 minutes to talk about. One of the things he does occupationally is that he explains to people about just because your insurance policy says there are limitations, they are not necessarily limitations, and how to address that. So it was amazing. And what's crazy is that I know that he and Brady personally have a connection. And I was there when we were at the cigar deck and he came over and talked to Brady. And now that I see the video, I'm like, oh, damn it. Like, because I would have loved to have talked to him more about this exact topic and kind of pick his brain about some stuff. So
he's a total sweetheart. He's my step poppy.
He's so it was really awesome that Dr. George, who we've talked about before, that we're planning on having on in the future to talk about medical and some prep stuff, that he did these series of videos. This is one of I don't know how many that he shot. And they're all pretty short from what I understand. So it's pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing more coming out. So I think everybody just kind of should take the 5.5 minutes, watch it, and get a little bit of an education on that for themselves. Chester?
Yeah. Or Chess.
Oh,
sorry, Chess.
Yeah, I've cheated and I've got two. The first one is a link to a video of me meeting Todrick Hall and having him say hi to Matthew and Gabe. Basically, I picked this one because Chester had made the commentary about the Oz album. And so I was like, hey, I've met him. It's cool. Here's a video. So that was fun. The second one is a link to a 1950s video called Boys Beware. And it's all about the scary, evil homosexual and how he's going to get you kind of thing. And it's like, it was like a real like PSA type video. But the reason that I've got it and the reason that I've named it, he's hairy, a bit scary, and here to boost your vocabulary, is because the music for it is this.
Oh my God.
It's Urban Dictionary with Gary. So let me tell you how fucking disturbing it was to add to a year's worth of goddamn episodes to then have that video come up and that's the music.
Oh my God.
So, you know, he's hairy.
Were you listening to the car dealership one in the same episode?
No, but it was pretty close. So he's here to boost your vocabulary, but boys, be wary. It's Urban Dictionary with Gary. So there it is.
So, Chaz, yes. I would like to apologize for the unintentional psychological infliction upon you. Because now every time someone plays that YouTube video, you'll be thinking of Urban Dictionary. Or every time we do Urban Dictionary, you'll be remembering the PSA.
Oh, well, I'll get over it.
Okay.
I accept your apology. Thank you. Moving on.
But now that you've pulled the curtain back, now all my co-hosts know where the fuck I got that sound clip from. Because when we started doing Urban Dictionary, they had no idea. Where awesome. That came from. It just magically appeared one day. And I was like, what? It's just a little ditty I found online. I thought it was funny.
Nice. All right.
Ray, what do you got?
All right. So this is Birthday. It's from a show, like a sketch comedy group called Loiter Squad. And it's called Happy Birthday, Bitch. It's essentially these guys that do a bunch of sketch stuff. And this one they're making fun of like the Real Housewives of Atlanta. And they are pretty much talking about how inconsiderate this girl was because she brought a birthday gift to this person's birthday party. Oh, and God. It makes me laugh every time.
I want to watch this so bad. Just that I just paused it and there's a black guy and a blonde wig with a flower. And I want to be like, okay, what is this? I want to see this. I really want to see this.
All right, I have to stop watching it. I don't know.
Yeah. I can't watch it while I'm... nice one.
Brady, what do you got?
Brady Richard.
So this is... I'm hoping it works. This is a post that I'm sharing from Facebook of a video that was taken from me, Tommy Wimey, last night at the Mr. Kentucky Leather Send-Off. They had a baby grand piano on the inside, and I don't get to play very often. And so I was talking to my friend Charlie, and he was just like, hey, play real quick. And so I started playing something from memory. It was Someone Like You by Adele, and people were singing in the background, and Sister Anime Series from Cincinnati was there making up her own lyrics to the song and cracking me up, and then people kept coming and singing into my ear. It was just pretty good, but I also just enjoyed actually getting to sit and play piano for a little bit.
Nice. It's actually really... I was able to watch it yesterday, and it's a really nice video. It's kind of a weird sort of calming thing. Like, here you are in your leathers and whatnot, and then, oh, you're playing the piano, and everyone's kind of, like, singing along. Now, I didn't hear the bad lyrics or whatnot, but it was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cute. It's just, it's very sweet. Aww. Yeah.
Didn't you also, Brady, do that in a Costco?
Yes, like, funnily enough, earlier that day I went to Costco while Aaron was getting his eye exam done, and I'm just wandering around, and they had all these pianos set up in the back, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to sit and play for a little bit, and I attracted a crowd. I should have set a bucket out and took donations.
Hashtag travel fun.
Right?
Nice.
Hey, guess what, folks? That's finally the end. There's plenty of ways to contact us. Pop over to our website, cubsoutloud.com. You can shoot us an email, ask any questions about anything we talked about in these last couple of shows at cubsoutloud@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail. It's 361-CWLTALK. That's 361-265-8255. We actually have a voicemail, which we'll probably do on another show. A new one. Not the sex line audition again. Although you could do that, whatever, and just leave a message. You can reach us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Google+, all at Cubs Out Loud in the appropriate place in the URL. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/CubsOutLoud. You'll see when we go live, so you can get a sneak peek at upcoming episodes when we record them. And also, you can watch this show right over there. Pop over to bearunderground.net and join us there in the Cubs Out Loud Entourage group. It's the official Bear website of Cubs Out Loud. Rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to us at Google Play Podcast. Give us a thumbs up on Stitcher Radio. Help us out with our streaming rig at gofundme.com/CULstream. And also you can buy COL merch at zazzle.com/CubsOutLoud. I have to throw this in because we haven't put it in our contact information list. You can find me anywhere on the internet. It's Box Set, Box Puppy, Box Cub, Box Wine. Something.
Oh my God, nice. Calm your tits, Jane Fonda.
I am TheaterCub79 on Burnerground, Tumblr, Growler, HeftyNet, Twitter. No, not Twitter. Twitter, I'm pup_umbra.
You can find me in person at Tidal Wave this coming weekend or on the internet. You can find me on Tumblr or Twitter under the name The Pup Up There or various bear dating sites across the net under the name Pup Shutter or Cupcake76.
Is it?
And you can pretty much find me anywhere on the web as Gibber73. Jeff?
What's that?
Jeff? I am Foxbear on Tumblr, Growler, FetLife, Fetocracy, and elsewhere online. Miss Tammy is Miss Tammy on FetLife.
Because she's creative.
Ray.
You can find me at sirsoutherncomfort.tumblr.com. You can email me at raytheboopblack@gmail.com, or you can find me in your frozen food section at your local grocer.
Nice.
And you can find me on various social media as Pup Tibbers or Ragnarok Cub, and also in person at Tidal Wave with Chester.
Okay, is it now? Is Tidal Rave this weekend, as in when this show airs, or this weekend coming
up? No. This airs on the 28th.
Right.
Yeah. Correct?
Yes.
Okay, Tidal Wave starts on the Thursday after.
Oh, okay.
So this will air, and 4 days later is when Tidal Wave starts.
You can see
that. Otherwise, I would have told people that I was going to be at IML.
Okay.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you will have caught Jess at IML. With that, there's only one thing left to say. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Peace. Have a good one, y'all.
Guess who's glaring at me right now?
Oh my gosh.
Hey, fine.
Yay.
Normally we do something like an hour ago or more. I still haven't fed Sonic.
Oh. Yeah. Well, we can end now, and because we kind of have to record yet another show. So
this is the show that never ends.
Amen to that.
And with that, I'm going to stop streaming.
Shit.
Ray, I have a personal question.
Oh, wait, I started streaming.
Then don't ask the question.
What is it with the chapstick, you all?
Miss Tammy, you should know better. Lube is part of the preparation.
I didn't get my shit on, too.
You know, if you deep throat, you can create it yourself.
I can't do that. That's what I have John Rocha for. I gag, brushing my teeth.
And we're live, folks. And
are
we're
we?
Live.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Priceless.
We usually cut this part off for the podcast, or we take this part and throw it at the end as a shawarma.
Well, there we go.
There you have it.
There you have it.